that, we'll move on to item 8, consider and take possible action concerning Sacker's legislative proposals. And I will turn it over to Karen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next week is the Sacker's conference. We did receive from Sacker's legislative proposals. Their plan is to have these up on the agenda for the 20 Searle systems to vote on Friday at the business meeting. There will be two action items. One will be for the Sacker's Legislative Committee's legislative proposal, and that you'll find a summary of in the memo that you have in the packet, starting on page 1 through 3. The second action item will be to vote on the LACERA legislative proposal, and that you will find summarized on starting on page 3 at the bottom of the memo through page 4. So there will be two action items. I'll begin reviewing each proposal, but you will see that the first one that came from the legislative committee is comprised of a number of changes. The LACERA proposal has one change that's being proposed. So we'll start with, on page 1 of the memo, we'll start with some of the cleanup legislation that the legislative committee is proposing. We have reviewed these. I did look at these various references to the government code, and they do seem to be appropriate, so there's no issue with those. Turning to page 2 of the memo at the top, the top two proposals also seem to be appropriate. The one regarding the age requirement for survivor benefits, we did meet with our staff, and the clarification there matches up with our staff's implementation of this provision, so we have no issue with this, and it would be appropriate to make that clarification. Next, and we're still on page 2, we do have some substantive changes that are being proposed, and we'll go through these one by one and talk about them. The first one is employer liabilities. Here, the legislative committee would like the law to clarify that the retirement boards under Searle have plenary authority to recommend adjustments to county and district contributions as necessary to ensure the appropriate funding of the system. There is already law about that point, but this would make a sort of a clear and succinct a statement of that, and it is in line with current law. At this point, I'd like to see if there's any questions I can answer.
Any questions? I'm not seeing any.
Great.
I'm sorry. One just came on. John.
Karen, would you describe plenary authority? What does that mean?
Very broad.
Very broad. And how might that be applied that it isn't now or differently?
The case that is cited there is a good example. We cite the Maharis versus Orange County Employees Retirement System case. This is a situation that we discussed a few months back. In Orange County, at their retirement system, they had an employer, a small district, that didn't have any more active members in the system because they had gone to CalPERS. They had retirees in the system, and they decided that they didn't want to pay their unfunded liabilities to OSRS, the Orange County Retirement System. That ended up in litigation. The trial court and the appellate court both agreed that OSRS had the ability, the authority to require the district to pay their liabilities. And so that's an example of what can come up in the board's discretion in making the actuarial calculations and requiring payment.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? I'm not seeing any.
Okay, let's move on then to the service credit purchases for parental leave. Currently, the Searle allows service credit purchases for uncompensated leave of absence due to an illness, and this legislative proposal would add the authority for counties to allow the purchase of service credit for parental leave. So it would be an additional reason for someone to be able to choose to purchase service. And that is the proposal. I did meet with our staff to discuss that. It would be, if this becomes the law, it would be an additional benefit that obviously we would need to accommodate, include in our informational materials, and allow that purchase. Next, we have the board approval of service retirement and delegation to staff. Current law provides that service retirements shall be made by the board, and this proposal would add the authority for the board to delegate to the retirement administrator or other personnel the power to retire members and require staff to report service retirements to the board at the next public meeting. And so this proposal, if it passes, would mean that the board could choose to delegate the service retirements to the administrator, but then there would have to be a report from the administrator to the board that shows these service retirements. So much like the consent item that you had at the beginning of this meeting that listed all of the service retirements, instead of having to approve that, you would simply accept that report. The actual retirement would be done administratively by staff.
And would that result in a retiree getting their check or potentially getting their first payment faster? Or would the payment start after the report out?
No, so the payment is not contingent on the report to the board.
So they would get it a little faster instead of waiting for us to approve? I'm assuming they don't get their first check until after we've approved it. Is that?
I would defer to our operational units to answer that in terms of the timing of the payment. Perhaps Gail or Christina Dunn could chime in.
That's not the case. I don't think that it would be a change in what we currently have.
So
as far as when the member receives the payment, correct?
Let me, Christina.
So some of our members do receive payment before it comes to the board currently.
Okay.
We process payments as soon as we get the option election from the member. Making this change would not, as far as we can see, change that process.
Okay.
So it wouldn't necessarily provide an earlier check. At this point, we provide it as early as we can.
Okay. Thank you.
Moving on, we're on page 3 of the memo at the top. 60-day retirement application window. This legislative proposal provides the option for a longer period. And I did meet with staff about this, and the issue that they raised was that it's too open-ended. So if a system decided to change that 60-day window, there is no maximum, so it's subject to various interpretations and decisions. It would be more helpful if they provided a range in that case.
And I think also some folks might have a perception that, oh, I get it turned in earlier so I can get my check even earlier. But the process is still the process that we still do have to wait until we get the information from the employer and the required documents are in and all of those types of items. If we did get applications in sooner for certain retirement dates, possibly we would have a better sense on, how many retirements we have ahead of us. But, yeah.
Next, reinstatement to prior benefit level. This goes to situations where members terminate employment for whatever reason and get a service retirement. Meanwhile, sometimes there are employment actions that go on where possibly the employee argues that they were wrongfully terminated, and that sometimes results in either a court or arbitration or other type of decision that requires the employer to reinstate the employee. And so that takes care of the employment status, but what about the retirement status? So this change in the law would say that the retirement system has to now reinstate the employee into their membership, active membership status, and that they would be placed in the tier that they were in prior to termination. Moving on to minimum age distributions, timing, and lump sum options. Currently, there is no lump sum option here. Well, there is for the member who's deferred, and they can choose to get a lump sum or a retirement. But if they don't make that decision, the retirement system has to begin paying them a monthly allowance under the rules. This proposal would add a lump sum option, meaning that the retirement system would be able to pay them a lump sum and not pay them the monthly allowance for their lifetime. Talking to staff about this particular provision, it again seemed very broad. The explanation that SACRS gave, the Ledge Committee gave to us, was that they would like to have this option if there's a very low amount left in the account, and instead of having to pay monthly benefits for the lifetime of the member, it would be more efficient for the system to simply provide a lump sum. But they didn't, in the actual legislative language, provide any type of threshold amount or maximum amount for this. So again, it's a bit broad. Also, our staff expressed a concern about having to make that decision for the member because reasonable minds might differ on whether a monthly payment it is more or less beneficial to someone than a lump sum. So those were the concerns with this proposal. So at this point, we completed
Hold on, one. I'm sorry, Karen. I have a hand raised here, and I hit the wrong button. John, please.
I've now got the red.
Yes.
Under the rules for private industry plans, the lump sum option was $5,000 or less, and that provided a very practical way to determine whether or not to pay $18.37 a month or a lump sum option of $3,228, and that covered it. So I like the idea of a lump sum option for very small payments, but the $5,000 cap is what was common in plans of corporations. It would seem practical here.
Thank you, and I think that the legislative committee would be open to a comment such as that, and so if the board wanted us to relay that to the Ledge Committee, we could ask them to add that into the bill or some other amount that they determine makes sense.
I would certainly encourage it.
So would we make that part of the motion? Or
yes,
do you just...
Or provide direction.
Or just provide direction. Does anyone have any objections to what John's proposing that we bring up in the Ledge session? I'm not seeing any electronic hands going up, so that direction has been provided.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. And so we've completed reviewing the one proposal from the Legislative Committee that contained all these different legislative changes. And now I'd like to move on to the proposal from LACERA, and you can see that on the bottom of page 3. And LACERA's proposal is also more of a substantive proposal in nature as opposed to cleanup. And currently, the SURL limits a member's non-service-connected disability retirement allowance to an annuity that is the actuarial equivalent of their accumulated contributions if the member's disability is due to intemperate use of alcoholic liquor or drugs, willful misconduct, or violation of law on the member's part. What that means is that essentially the member is getting a lower allowance if there's a finding of intemperate use of alcoholic liquor or drugs, willful misconduct, or violation of law. on the member's part. The consequence is the allowance is lower. That's how the law is currently written. Correct. Correct. And so Lucera's provided the following explanation, which you'll find on the top of page 4 of the memo. Views on alcohol and drug use have evolved from a legal and moral perspective to a medical, scientific, and public health perspective, from temperance and prohibition to treatment, recovery, and counseling. The public policy underlying the limitation on non-service-connected disability retirement allowances due to intemperate use of alcohol, liquor, or drugs may no longer reflect contemporary views of alcohol and drug use. If alcohol and drug use were viewed from a disease perspective rather than a moral failure, the benefit limitation as a consequence would be financially punitive and discriminatory for members. And Lucera did note that because this would be a substantive change to the benefit structure in SERL, some SAPR systems may not be amenable to this proposal.
And my question to staff, have we used this in the last 5 years? Do we use this very often? And that's what I'm curious.
We have, but not often. It comes up very rarely.
I would think so, because normally substance abuse also can be tied to a mental illness, which is something that we do recognize as an issue. So I'm just curious, how big an issue is this? How big would it skew our, you know, actuarial valuations? I just don't see in this current day and age most people just saying, you're a drunk, that's all that's wrong with you. I mean, there's recurring, you know, other co-occurring conditions that would probably bring upon, you know, the disposition of any case. So that's why I'm just curious, how often does this come up?
Not often at all. I mean, we look back over the last few years, and I think there was possibly one.
Yeah. I mean, you say the last few years, last 10 years, last 5 years?
I think monetarily it's safe to say that it wouldn't make a huge difference. Yeah. I'm open to Gail and Christina chiming in on this.
I would agree with that. It wouldn't make a material difference.
Okay. No, I'm supportive because I see addiction is much the same as any other illness, like a mental illness or like any other sickness that needs to be appropriately treated. So rather than being punitive, I don't have a problem with this saying, let's go ahead and remove that.
I agree with you, Candace. I always found this provision to be selective. You know, essentially it's saying self-sabotage, but, you know, you could just be overweight, you could be a smoker, you know, these are all things that, you know, you're doing to your body, so I'm in support as well.
So the one other comment that I will make, based off of John's comment about proposing a cap, did you also want to consider making a similar comment regarding the 60-day retirement application window, extending that, and asking the legislative committee to put some sort of a cap on that?
Would that be advantageous to us?
It would make it clearer and less broad. I don't know that there's another advantage other than that.
So what are you looking for in terms of direction on that?
Simply direction, if the board cares to propose to the ledge committee to have impose a cap on that provision, we can communicate that comment to them.
Does anyone have any objections to directing staff as such? And Rusty?
Yeah, again, the default is 60 days, if I understand correctly. But it's giving the systems the leeway based on their business needs to choose a different time. Do we want to get into the business of telling the other systems what we think is should be their cap, or should we just leave it at their discretion? It seems like the language is written to be permissible, so each system can decide for themselves what they feel is best for themselves, as opposed to, in our case, us limiting them to what we feel is best for them. So, just a thought there. I'm fine with it as it is. What they do to themselves is what they'll live with. Hopefully, they'll make the right choice. But in that case, we'll choose either 60 days or whatever we decide is best.
Any other comments on Rusty's thought to leave as is? Right? Not seeing anything. Karen, did you have anything further on these two items?
No, not unless there's any questions.
Would you prefer that they be in one motion or two separate motions? I have a preference. So then I'll leave it to the trustees to decide how they want to make that motion. And is there someone who would like to make a motion?
In one fell swoop, so that combine all of our recommendations.
And with the direction previously provided. Okay.
Is the motion to have the board's delegate vote to support both proposals?
Okay. And
second.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes, with the 5,000 cap. As directed. Okay, seeing no hands, I will call for a vote.
Do we have a second?
Yes, Donnie seconded. And is there still, okay, there we go. Seeing 8 votes, stop the vote. The motion passes 8-0. The ayes were Anderson, Finley, Kroll, Kwan, McDonald, Phillips, Smithy, and Watts. So thank you on that item, Karen. With that, we're